Recently, I worked with youth who had been marginalized from the Syracuse City School District with the Center for Community Alternatives. Many of those youth had the school system had not been a good fit for them the way it is designed now, and many of their parents had also been incarcerated at one point. And I am now retired. One other thing I would like to add is that I have been a long time been active in an organization called Witness for Peace, a national organization, actually international in organization, that is a nonprofit and is primarily known for its delegations to countries, most of them in Latin America and the Caribbean, that have been involved in U.S. foreign policy. The organization visits and interviews people on all sides of issues and all walks of life, and then comes back and presents a report and makes a decision on how to impact U.S. foreign policy. I'm still part of that organization, and then, of course, very active in the School of the Americas Watch, which is the organization that led me to my witness and consequently incarceration in federal prison.
And for the listeners, start out by explaining a little bit about the School of the Americas, maybe the history of it, and where it's located and those kind of things.
Yes, the School of the Americas is located in Georgia, Columbus, Georgia. It is located on Fort Benning Base. It was initially established in Panama in 1946. Panama asked that it be it leave the country in 1984 under the terms of the Panama Canal Treaty, and it was reestablished in Georgia. It is funded by the U.S. taxpayers, and as over the years since 1946, there has been documentation and acknowledgement by our U.S. government members of Congress that there have been the military officers who have been trained there from various countries in the Western Hemisphere have been involved in massacres and coups and atrocities that, after returning to their home country, there even was a point when there were military manuals in Spanish discovered at the School of the Americas that were manuals in how to torture. This again was acknowledged by the school and by the U.S. Congress. So for many years, there have been individuals and groups that have been working to not only ask for accountability and visibility and investigation of the school, but also to have the school closed.
Mm-hmm. And the information about torture was only brought to light through a Freedom of Information request, I believe.
Yes, that's right. That's right, Peter.
And so since the school, there have been protests there annually. Do you know when the protests started? What year?
I believe the protests started in with a very small group of individuals. Roy Bourgeois, who was a Jesuit priest, a Maronite priest, when he was working in South America, the school was called to his attention, and he is actually the founder of the School of America's Watch and one of the first individuals to be involved in a vigil outside the gates of the school. And so that was in the 1990s, and the vigils have grown in size and continue until today. In fact, there is one scheduled for 2011.
And so these take place in once a year in November, is that correct?
Yes.
At the right in front of the military base?
Yes, that's right. The vigil actually happens on the anniversary of a massacre that happened in El Salvador during the Civil War. School of the America graduates were, it was found that School of the America graduates were the perpetrators of a massacre of six Jesuit priests and their housekeeper and her daughter at the university in El Salvador. And it is on that anniversary in November that the group gathers to from all over the country and other countries at the gates to call for the closing of the school. It is a nonviolent, prayerful vigil, also a time to share what are the most recent incidents that have been occurring around our hemisphere related to those people who've been trained at the SOA.
So the people who are trained at the school, in torture and things like this, what are they being used for, or by who are they serving?
Well, that's a good question, Peter. They come from their countries to the school to be trained, and then they are officers in the military of individual countries, and when they return, they are continue to be part of the military, and in each country, different incidents have occurred, and some of them, for example, there were graduates of the School of the Americas that were involved in the assassination of Archbishop Oscar Romero, as he had become an advocate and for speaking out for the poor and the marginalized in his country. He actually went through a transformation. He had been a fairly conservative bishop, and through seeing the suffering of the people, he did a turnaround and began to speak out, and consequently was assassinated. The most recent incidents connected, I'm trying to think of a couple of ones that have happened in the last year or two. There was, for example, a coup in Honduras. I believe it's 2 years now in the early summer. And that coup has been linked to the School of America graduates. There were School of the America graduates named in the recent military standoff of the president of Ecuador, and he was actually held hostage for a short time in the hospital in a hospital in his country. There have been incidents that have happened throughout history, but these things are still current and are still happening.
Mm-hmm. And it's not only political, but also sometimes these groups are used to protect corporate, multinational corporate interests as well?
Yes, absolutely. They are, in fact, many people who have been victims of some of the atrocities were union organizers, in particular in Colombia, with companies that are global corporate. Coca-Cola, in particular, has a terrible reputation with how its union organizers have been treated. It is very, very linked to labor and globalization.
Mm-hmm. And how did the school first come to your attention?
I have been involved for a very long time with an organization, as I mentioned earlier, Witness for Peace, mm-hmm. and have traveled many times on delegations to Latin America, and also am part of an organization here in Central New York called the Caribbean Latin American Coalition, CLAC we call ourselves, and I have been following our foreign policy in Latin America for a very long time. It was no surprise then for me to find out that the School of the Americas was involved, and so friends of mine in Syracuse and people who have been part of these organizations, Witness for Peace and locally CLAC, have been involved in going to some of the earliest vigils, and I believe the first time I traveled to a vigil was in 1997, and I have been traveling there with the exception of, I think, 1 year, every year since.
Mm-hmm. And what about the school made you feel so strongly that you're willing to commit to going to prison over protesting it?
At a certain point, having tried all the means within our process of trying to change foreign policy and our country's, United States, approach to sisters and brothers in Latin America, I had gone through many, many different processes of petitions and lobbying and writing to congressmen and calling congresspeople and calling them and mm-hmm. and speaking out and putting on programs and hosting refugees, part of the sanctuary movement in Central New York. At a certain point, it became clear that going to the vigil and being part of those who called forth the names of victims of the School of the Americas and listening to speakers was not quite enough, that the next step for me and for many others was to risk arrest and to cross into the base. And I actually did that in 1997 and then again in 1998. In fact, I've been a peacekeeper there and have accompanied many people who were arrested over the years. And this time, it was my time to again risk arrest, and it seemed to be a natural progression and a way to stand in solidarity with my sisters and brothers, and also in doing so, I remembered the places I had visited and the people I had spoken with. I had visited the sites of massacres, the Acteal massacre in Mexico and El Mazote massacre and small museum and burial ground in El Mazote, El Salvador. It was time for me to also experience prison witness.
Mm-hmm. And the people who risk arrest generally are the people who cross onto the base?
Yes, that's right.
And so the first year, from what I've heard, Father Roy Bourgeois was the one who, maybe it was just him, or maybe it was him and a few other people, had crossed onto the base and thrown paint, red paint in the hallways to symbolize the murders.
That is probably true. I hadn't heard that particular piece of history, but I'm sure you're right.
Mm-hmm. And so, once that occurred, what were the repercussions of crossing onto the base?
The repercussions have been have been prison in various prison terms, and usually federal prison. There have been some arrests outside the gates and local charges made, but prison terms have really not resulted as much from that, those kinds of incidents. The individuals that cross onto the base intentionally and peacefully, nonviolently, understand that there is always a risk of arrest and imprisonment. And there have been often in the process, the U.S. government and the police in the city of Columbus have been alerted by the School of America Watch that there will be a vigil and that there will be the possibility of nonviolent direct action. And so oftentimes the military has buses to round people up and at the gates of the base there are many local police lining the streets, and on the other side of the fence there are military who have been called to be there to make arrests as people cross on.
Mm-hmm. And you said in the past there's been as many as, how many people have there been that have crossed onto the base and maybe the biggest crossing?
The largest crossing, there were several, I guess it was in 1997, there were several thousand people that crossed onto the base. And at that, all people, well, the first a large group, there were 601 people arrested. And the next year, there were several thousand, so many that the military was unprepared to make arrests, and they actually just let people walk onto the base. They rounded them up in buses and dropped them off in a park. A change really happened in after 9/11, and at that point, there was some. The military began to regard the nonviolent protesters as more. I don't know. I guess you would say they began to take a different approach and to how this action was happening, and they began to erect fences, large, tall fences with barbed wire at the top. And I think there are now three fences across the gate, the main gate. And so someone who wants to enter from that way must actually climb the fence, cross over the barbed wire. There were two young men who did that this last year, David Omani, who is from California, and Chris Spicer, both crossed over the fence right in front of me. I actually was a peacekeeper at the gate, and they are now each serving 6 months in prison.
Mm-hmm. So it's different ages groups that are serving prison sentences and risking arrest for this cause?
Yes. I think that is one of the most hopeful parts of this witness. There are the two of the people who were arrested this year, Nancy Smith and Father Father Louis Vitali, mm-hmm. are actually 78 years old. And then David and Chris are in their 20s, and so it's very heartening for me to see that not only those of us who have lived through many years of watching things go on and witnessing things that have been going on by the U.S. government that we do not like to see, but also young people are taking the risk. Mm-hmm. And each person who makes a decision to cross and risk prison sentence has a support group that watch over them and communicate with them and with their communities, so that their witness is shared and explained.
Mm-hmm. And then tell us a little bit about your what you saw inside the prison.
I was sentenced a year ago in January to go to Danbury Prison, and I actually left on March 8th, International Women's Day, and I self-reported, so that means I was, I turned myself in. The trial was in January, and I turned myself in at the day they requested I report. I was most surprised to find that in the Federal Correctional Institution of Danbury, there are 1,300 or more women, and I found that there were 500 or more, and this was shared with me by a staff person, women who were there because of immigration violations, often illegal reentry, just as I had illegally reentered into the military, military base. They had reentered into the United States and were many to see family, children, and husbands and loved ones were here, but had been arrested and were then sentenced to serve terms, and were then following their sentence to be deported. Many people were Spanish-speaking, but there were women from other places, too. And I found that, too, because I was there, the reasons for people to migrate to the United States are often because of not just economic, but physical fear and conditions that do not allow people to live in a safe environment. And so I found the women in prison to be directly connected to what I had discovered and over the years.
And were you able to converse with them at all?
Yes, I was. Of course, I know some Spanish, but I'm not able to speak fluently. But I have just a number of stories to tell about women who were incarcerated and at Danbury. For example, I can give you a couple of examples. There it was a woman who had been crossing over the border to be connected with her family, and she was charged with reentry, and her husband is a U.S. citizen living in Los Angeles. They have five children. All the children are citizens because they were born in this country. The youngest is 8, and she actually had called her family to speak to them over the telephone fairly recently, and her husband was fearful that something would happen to the family there because of her being in prison, and had blocked her calls, and she told me the story weeping. Mm. There was another woman who was there from Nicaragua, and she was sentenced to 12 months and then will be deported, and she has 10 children living in Texas from ages 15 to 27. The youngest 6 are all U.S. citizens, and the oldest 4 are all documented with working papers. She will be deported. And the last example I'd like to give, a young woman in Andrea from Chicago, she was brought to this country with her parents when she was 3 and raised in Chicago. Her parents are documented permanent residents, but never became U.S. citizens, and so she is not. All her youngest siblings were born in the United States and are citizens, and she faces deportation upon release, even though all her family is living in Chicago. And she's She's a teacher at Danbury. She's an artist. She offers so many things. She's offered so much to this country. So there were just story after story of the situations of women who not only were separated from family, but were facing not seeing their family again. And then, of course, if you return, if you're deported to a country and your family is still there, what will you do? Won't you, in fact, try very hard to see them again? So it's really a policy that just doesn't work.
I don't know if you're familiar with Mark Emery, but he is a Canadian citizen, and he was extradited to the United States for selling marijuana seeds through the mail. And he is serving a prison sentence right now in the D. Ray James Correctional Facility, and I believe that's in Georgia.
Uh-huh.
And he has mentioned that he has seen a very high Hispanic population within the prison, and he's trying to help some of the people there to learn English while they're there.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. The other thing that happens within prison, I observed, is that there are many programs, not near enough, don't get me wrong, many programs and offerings to women who are United States citizens, but those are not extended to the women who are incarcerated from other countries. So except for a small smattering of programs on GED, getting your GED in a second language, there's just nothing there for the women who are passing their time. And I found that to be very offensive.
Mm-hmm. About the, well, go ahead.
Oh, I just, it's amazing to me that the prison system, which has such a high rate of incarceration anyway for people in this country, it's amazing that the prison system has become part of our immigration policy to this extent. And there aren't paths. There in the call, the cry out for immigration reform and paths to citizenship for people, for example, who have been in this country for many years, instead of seeking ways for that to happen, the prison system and forced labor, you would have to say, they're there, and many women in prison, at least I witnessed, we are doing contracts for Fortune 500 companies and making products in the prison industry that fit the needs of our country.
That's unbelievable. What types of products were being made?
There were products, military products, pieces being made. I heard after I had returned that there have actually been some call centers set up on some prison grounds. Call centers that used to be offshore are returning here and to this country and inside prison walls. I was working as an office clerk and a teacher
mm-hmm.
when I was in prison for 6 months. I worked about maybe 8 or 9 hours each day, and I was paid 12.5 cents an hour.
Wow. And do you know some of the names of the corporations who were involved?
I can't, at this point, give you names, but I would encourage people to do some research to find out a little bit more about the prison industry. And there's been much written about this U.S. phenomena too. Angela Davis was just here in Syracuse teaching a course at Syracuse University, and she has recently spoken out. Well, she's spoken out her whole life about again the prison system and how it fits into close to slave labor.
So, are there legal policies that prevent you from talking about things like this at the time? At this time,
no.
Okay.
Well, if there are, I'll find out, I guess. I don't think so. I think one of the important things to do after going through an experience as I have is to continue to speak truth to power and continue to find out what I can about ways to support people that are in prison and to change the prison system. I have always been found it to be grossly unjust, but now that I have experienced it and met so many strong women, so many women who should not have been sentenced to prison, who were there for nonviolent crimes, so many people that should have been given an opportunity to make amends and to go through some sort of recovery process in their communities.
Mm-hmm. Will you tell us a little about what's happening in Washington, D.C. Relating to the school?
Yes. In addition to the vigil that happens every fall in November at the anniversary of the Jesuits massacre, there has been each spring a time of gathering, days of action in Washington, D.C. And this year there are activities that begin on April 4th, just a couple of weeks. Beginning with a fast that is happening on the step in front of the White House, and then there are activities throughout the entire week. There will be panels offered. There will be ways to lobby your Congress people. And on Saturday, April 9th, there is a meeting for to plan direct action at the White House, and there will be on Sunday, April 10th, an anti-militarization conference that will be held with speakers and who will again update those attending on the United States military policy, mm-hmm. Lobbying Congress. And so throughout the entire week, beginning on April 4th through April 11th, there will be activities going on, many opportunities. The best place to find out details and to find out places for inexpensive housing is to go to the SOA Watch website and find out what things are happening be able to participate in those things.
And the SOA Watch website is soaw.org? Is
yes.
Correct?
Uh-huh. soaw.org. Then I might add that following that activity, there will be days of prayer and action on Columbia in Washington, D.C., so people can go and just spend the whole month.
And if people from this area are interested, do you know if there are buses going from Syracuse?
I don't believe there are buses going, but there are, again, going to the SOA Watch website, there are suggestions for inexpensive transportation. Some people from Syracuse, I believe, are traveling by local bus. We sort of decided to make our way and then gather when we arrived in Washington for those that are going.
Mm-hmm. And people that are just interested in learning a little bit more about the School of the Americas, where can they go for that?
I would suggest again going to the SOA Watch website. It's very important to inform yourself. I feel very committed to that, and to share what you learn, and to take action on what you have learned if you are so moved to do so. Writing your congresspersons, participating in vigils and actions, supporting prisoners of conscience. Listening to voices from other people from other countries, voices of solidarity, and there are good references to that. I might also recommend people to go to the Witness for Peace website, and that is, again, just witnessforpeace.org. They are very connected to the School of the Americas, sister organizations, I guess you would say.
Mm-hmm. And is there anything that I haven't asked you about that you would like to bring up?
I think that I would just like to see in these times, we have been witnessing not only in our own country but in places around the world, groups of people that have come together and given each other courage and confidence to speak out about happenings, about movements, about directions that governments are going in. It takes courage to do that, and I guess I would hope that people would not worry so much about the consequences, but walk arm in arm and inform each other and form coalitions to speak out so that change can happen, and so that all people of all walks of life can share in what this good earth has to offer. And if you have an opportunity to speak to someone who has done a witness, prison witness, to invite them to speak to your organization, and to hear why. And then again, just to remind everyone that there are some very fine principles of nonviolence, Martin Luther King Jr.'s principles of nonviolence that evolved from other people who spoke truth to power through the centuries. It's important to be active, but to be nonviolent in resistance to evil. And that is the way coalitions are formed and the injustice is defeated.
Nancy, is there a book that you would recommend to the listening audience on any topic?
Well, that's a good question, too. I'm sitting in a room surrounded by books. I would recommend, first of all, to find out some information, more information about the School of the Americas. I would recommend reading Jack Nelson Paul Meyer's School of Assassins. He has a revised edition, and Jack Nelson Paul Meyer has attended many vigils. He in his book in particular, he speaks to things we have talked about today, and the subtitle of his book is Guns, Greed, and Globalization. I think that would be a good place to start. He has footnotes that refer you to many other sources. So that would be my stepping point, step-off point.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for joining us this morning, and thank you for your convictions.
Thank you so much for inviting me, and I look forward to following your programs in the future.